in Portland. The doors and info tables start at 5:30 and the panel starts at 6:30. Rumbles are always free. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Next week, we'll talk with Street Roots investigative reporter Jeremiah Hayden, who has dug up even more dirt about the weird machinations of some of Portland city administrators. We'll go out with music by Alan Toussaint. My engineer is Ray Bodwell. Thanks a lot, Ray, and thanks for listening, and stay safe.
Now is the time. Now is the time for all good men to get together with one another. Iron out their problems and iron out their quarrels and try to live as brothers. And try to find peace within without stepping on one another. And do respect to the women of the world, just remember we all had mothers.
Make this land a better land in the world in which we live.
And help each man be a better man. And I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know done well we can work it out.
Oh yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can. Why can't we if we want to? Yes we can.
I know we can make it work.
I know that we can.
I know we can make it if we try.
Oh yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can. Great gosh almighty, yes we can, I know we can.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland. 90.7 FM Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Makes you such a threat.
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Joshua.
Ambete washtelo, chante washte na page use up yellow. Le un kipigi he washtelo. Greetings, good day. I welcome you, my relatives, and I shake your hands with a good heart. It's good for all of us to be here. And this is First Voices Radio, National International, and I'm Teokasen Ghost Horse. I'm sending you greetings and strength from the lands of the Muncie, speaking Lenape. First Voices Radio is an all-Native hosted, all-Native produced by a member of the Red Lake Ojibwe Nation, Liz Hill. Well, today's guest on First Voices Radio is Leona Morgan. Udine is an Indigenous organizer who has been fighting nuclear colonialism since 2007. She is a co-founder of Hall No, a campaign to stop uranium mine near the Grand Canyon and transport through Navajo Nation. Recently, she helped to halt Holtec in New Mexico. Ildiona is also pursuing a Master of Community and Regional Planning at the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Well, this is about something that we don't hear of, goes under the radar most part. What happens to that which we don't hear because of all the political hubbub that's happening? People are paying attention to that in the vernacular of politics in the United States. So, Leona, thank you and welcome to First Voices Radio.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Hi, I'm actually here in New York as well. I'm here in town for the third meeting of states parties for the United Nations Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. And yeah, thank you for having me today. There's a lot going on out in the Southwest dealing with uranium mining, and not just the transport, but so many other issues are really picking up lately.
And that is the radioactive transport you're talking about through the Grand Canyon, meaning more than deadly waste for another Native community, White Mesa Ute community. That, and in Utah, also the Havasupai in the Grand Canyon, and of course, the Navajo or Dene Nation in various states, actually. So would you speak to that, Leona? What is the alarm that we need to hear and also sound?
Right, thank you. Well, locally here in New York, Governor Hochul, is it right? Hochul or?
Yes.
She's pushing for new nuclear. And so locally here, there's a push for developing nuclear energy, but folks really don't know where the fuel comes from, which is the uranium. So uranium is the fuel for both nuclear energy and nuclear weapons. Right now, we're experiencing a big push for new mining in the Southwest. There's a lot of old mines that were never properly cleaned up. These are called abandoned uranium mines. The abandoned mines are from the federal government's weapons development program back in the 50s to the 1970s. And all of those abandoned uranium mines, they are still not cleaned up, yet now there's a push for new mining. On Navajo Nation, we have some cleanup happening, but it's not to the community's standards. It's really just the federal government doing, the minimum, the most minimum, cheapest job to say, okay, this is cleaned up. But what people really want is restoration. We want cleanup of the groundwater. We want health studies. We want to understand what is this radioactive contamination in the environment and now in our bodies. So that's part of it. But just to be very clear, right now, because the United States stopped purchasing uranium from Russia last year, the United States, along with more than 30 other countries, are pushing to develop nuclear energy for the sake of a so-called solution to climate change. And they're actually pushing to triple the amount of nuclear energy by 2050. So right now, because of climate change, there's a lot of countries who are under this false narrative that nuclear is going to save us. And so this is something I think the sounding alarm is that we need to change how nuclear energy is measured in terms of carbon and in terms of environmental damage, because people think nuclear is carbon-free. And that's because the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, a body of the United Nations, the IPCC, they only measure the output of carbon at the nuclear power plant. And there's several stages before the power plant. Of course, the mining, the milling, the fuel fabrication, everything that takes place, enrichment, conversion, deconversion, all of these steps require energy. And most of it is provided by fossil fuels. So we have to look at the entire nuclear fuel chain, meaning from the beginning of the mining all the way to the power plant, and then after the power plant. So after the nuclear power plant, the waste that's produced is going to be radioactive for hundreds of thousands of years and needs to be in containers safe away from the human population as well as the environment. So in order to keep that waste safe, they put it in different types of containers and canisters, casks, different things that use a lot of metal and concrete. And it's really irresponsible for the IPCC not to include the carbon footprint of all of the mining and then the waste storage afterward, which is essentially forever. And so people, even climate activists, even some of the environmentally friendly folks out there, some of them think nuclear is safe or clean or, you know, benign. And so what I'm here to say is uranium mining is killing our people. And so in the Southwest and all across the Intermountain West, between Wyoming, going south, you know, South Dakota, all of these states, Colorado, Utah, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, there has been a lot of uranium mining in the past. And a lot of these places are still dealing with unknown health effects, different types of cancers, autoimmune disease, reproductive problems. And our people are experiencing these things now, going all the way back. You know, the causes we're connecting it to are not just the Manhattan Project, which you know, was the reason to develop uranium in the first place, but from that first nuclear explosion in 1945, there were also, that first test was in New Mexico. And then, of course, people know that we used those weapons in Japan. But people don't know that there were over 900 nuclear weapons tests in Nevada, and all of that fallout traveled east. So our people, the Navajo Nation, the land, all of, so I'm Diné, so of course I'm going to be talking about the Navajo Nation, but all people, all of the indigenous nations and all of the residents downwind from the Nevada tests are at risk, you know, from these. Of course, they were done mostly, you know, a few decades ago, and there's not a lot of nuclear testing now, but there are some subcritical tests and things still happening. And I think people in New York probably have no idea what's going on out in the West, but, you know, I'm talking about the old stuff, the legacy, the existing problems. And now, because of this new push, because of climate change, and then also to develop nuclear weapons, there's a strong push for new mining. And this push, it's not just for mining, but also milling. And there's only one mill in the country right now, really close to the Four Corners area in Southeast Utah. And that mill, it processes uranium ore, but it also processes, it has a license for two things. One of them is uranium, and the other is called alternate feed. So this alternate feed license is basically used to process any kind of radioactive waste for a couple of reasons. The mill, which is owned by Energy Fuels, they want to, you know, make money. So they're trying to develop what's called REE, rare earth elements or rare earth minerals. You're hearing a lot about it in the news. And the mill, it also processes uranium ore. So these are the two things that the mill, you know, what they're doing there is processing these different materials and using a lot of water. This is on Ute Mountain, Ute land. And so, like you said, it's not just the people at the mine, the Havasupai, who are being impacted, and then the Utes at the mill, and then, of course, the transport on Navajo and Hopi. But anyone in that region where the mill is located will be impacted because of the amount of water that the mill uses, and then also the contamination. So what's going on now is the United States is really trying to develop the mill to process for rare earth elements, along with uranium and other minerals. So recently, you know, we're fighting this transport fight. The mine at the Grand Canyon just started last year, and then they started to transport uranium from the mine to the mill. Because of that transport, the Navajo Nation has a law against transport, and it set off a series of events where the transport was temporarily paused so that the Navajo Nation can address some issues with lack of regulations on this type of transport. So the Navajo Nation actually had a law saying no transport that they later changed to regulating transport. And in the meantime, the Navajo Nation is, you know, they're working on these new regulations that have not been legislated or codified. So the company Energy Fuels, you know, they don't want to wait until the regulations are done. So they actually went into an agreement and a negotiation with the tribe to transport uranium, resulting in a horrible negotiation that some Navajo Nation officials actually entered into this like a confidential, almost secret negotiation with the company that the council didn't know about, that other branches, you know, the entire Navajo Nation government, only a small percent, a tiny, like a handful of people knew what went into the negotiations. Not anybody else, not the public, not the people on the haul route, not the other tribes. And what the Navajo Nation negotiated was to allow the transport, but also to go in business with the uranium company, to sell them, well, basically to, it's unclear if they're selling uranium waste to the company, but there is an agreement for the company, Energy Fuels, to take uranium waste off of the reservation in the name of cleanup. But really what they're going to do is process it and, you know, try to develop rare earth elements or uranium. And so this is basically the situation happening now. Is there's a push for new mining, new milling, new nuclear energy, new nuclear weapons. And we're feeling it at home. There's the companies are trying to come back. There's new permit proposals. And of course, we're fighting this new mine, but it's everything that's happening. It's not just the mining and the milling, but also a push for nuclear energy to be labeled as renewable or clean, not only to garnish, you know, federal funds, but some people actually believe that it is. And so we're, you know, needing to let everybody know this is not the way to go. We don't want more nuclear. We don't want more radioactive waste. You know, we don't want more cancers and more deaths because of this.
Okay. Thank you, Leona Morgan. You earlier said that the world has been convinced that we need nuclear energy to save us, basically. And in the United States, there must be at least several hundred nuclear reactors. And I'm wondering how many more nuclear reactors is there being planned to be built here in the U.S.?
That's a great question. So right now, there in the United States, there have been just over 100 nuclear reactors at about 65 nuclear power plants. So some of the power plants have more than one reactor. And if people use Plant Vogtle in Georgia as an example, they're the power plant that has just opened or started, you know, one of the newest reactors in the country. And that reactor took several years and is millions of dollars over budget. It's took way longer than they planned. So it's over budget and took longer than estimated to come online. So just, you know, looking at that as an example, it's really not probable that the United States can triple the exact same type of reactors we've been using. And so what they're saying is they're going to make a new reactor called a small modular reactor, or SMR. So the idea is all of the new reactors would be this so-called new technology. In reality, they're not, the technology is not very new. It's just that these small modular reactors, they don't exist the on a commercial scale right now. There's no proven design for a small modular reactor in the whole country. Yet the government and municipalities, states, all of these entities are planning for new nuclear reactors. And it's really interesting that there's a lot of investment and even legislation going forward to support these so-called small modular reactors when, like I said, when they don't even exist yet. And so this is the idea that that not only the United States, but around the world, the nuclear industry is selling this idea that they can produce a different type of reactor and, in fact, triple the amount of nuclear energy. So I don't think it's possible. First of all, it's highly improbable to get all of the money needed and build these things to come online, you know, within the next 20 years. It's really this propaganda that's being created by the nuclear industry, as well as some of the world's states, to continue to invest in nuclear. But the reality is, if you take the same amount of money and the same time frame that it would take to do all this, we could have, you know, established way more renewable energies in the same amount of time using way less money. And then what I say, my personal kind of take on this whole thing is, it's really unlikely that humans are ever going to produce the amount of energy we want for all of the luxuries that we have today. So we as a human species, we really need to look at our consumption and live more within our means, because the amount of energy that we're using, and then with the population growth, it's not possible. I don't think the Earth will be able to sustain everybody having cell phones, everybody having cars and driving endless miles or kilometers. We really need to examine what we're doing to our Mother Earth and see the signs that, you know, that we're being given, that we're going into some really serious times here. I mean, one of the things that was kind of highlighted to me recently is Mother Earth gives us these messages. And right now, as a Diné person, we're in the fourth world, and we destroyed the previous worlds, is essentially what happened, by not honoring our teachings and things like that. So right now, you know, it's really interesting as a Diné person to think about it in that terminology, that we really are destroying this world. Of course, Mother Earth and the universe will continue in some way. And so I do believe that with all of the push for new nuclear, all of the changes that we're seeing in the climate, in how we live our lives every day, you know, it's not the same as our grandparents. It's not the same as our ancestors, of course. We're seeing a lot of things happening in nature that are kind of like warnings for us as humans. So like one of them, a huge one, is that we saw the Northern Lights. You know, some people saw them really far south in Arizona and New Mexico. And then last week, or just, you know, not too long ago, there was an earthquake in Tuba City or nearby where people on the res felt it. So these are not normal things that happen. And so people are really waking up to a lot of the environmental changes, not just uranium, but there's also a push for hydrogen development, helium. And then of course, people probably heard about the lithium mining. So all of the energies that exist and the new energies that people want to develop, we have to ask ourselves, where do the minerals come from? Where does the fuel come from? And how is it impacting the people that live next to these places? So we really need to, you know, stop developing nuclear. And that doesn't mean just, you know, stopping uranium mining out in the Southwest. Mm-hmm. It means stopping new nuclear energy in New York and all over the country.
This is something new that you are probably already aware of, Leona, is technology such as AI, also been building, let's say, corporations like Google and Microsoft, are building mini reactors, one along the Columbia River in Washington, Oregon, and the other one's here in New York somewhere. Is that an issue being brought up? I think you mentioned small nuclear reactors or nodules, but you said that may not be possible. But yet these small corporations are indeed building them because they can afford to build them.
Right, exactly. So this is what we're dealing with is on Navajo and all over the world, wherever there's uranium mining, our people are suffering because these big tech companies want to either restart old reactors like Three Mile Island, which is already, you know, a horrible example, a very unsafe situation to try to restart an old reactor. And then they're also talking about building new reactors. A lot of this energy would go straight to AI. It's not going to serve the people. It's not, you know, making energy for humans, but for these big tech companies to continue and to develop AI, which, you know, we as humans, I think, of course, in the Southwest, we're in the desert. It's much easier to see that we need to reserve and preserve our water resources. Some of these computer facilities, they use a lot of water as well. And so people in the cities, I don't think they understand how important it is for us to protect our water. And so this is something the push for nuclear by these tech companies, it's going to impact not just, you know, the development of energy and, you know, we don't know the economics behind that, but at the end of the day, the real impact will go to the people, you know, who are living near the facilities, either the uranium mining facilities or even when they, you know, if they start these new reactors, those communities will also be impacted. And I hope people are aware that nuclear energy is not safe. And so having a nuclear reactor in your neighborhood is not a good idea. It's not something that we should be planning for, and definitely not allowing more development of radioactive waste that really has nowhere to go.
Well, Leona Morgan, thank you for joining us here. She is an Indigenous organizer who has been fighting nuclear colonialism since 2007. Where can we find out more about Hall No and the information that you were talking about?
Great. Yeah, there's a lot of resources out there. Folks can go to hallno.com. You can follow us on our social media. There's also websites like the Uranium Atlas that has a lot of information. There's Gender and Radiation, which talks about some of the health impacts. There's a website called Radioactive Waste Coalition that also has some information about the nuclear energy. And yeah, and there's a lot of folks in the Southwest that are also getting active and getting involved. We have a brand new organization that just started called Bitty Roots. They don't have a website yet, but I'll be happy to share that or maybe recommend one of them to your show next time you need a guest, Yokasin. So
sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. I'll send you some links and provide our email, which is stopcanyonmine@gmail.com.
Oh, it's so great to talk to you once again, Leona. And thank you for the great information and for being there. People who are hearing this program will really open up and, you know, kind of pay attention to what you are doing, but what is needed to be done, and you're doing it. So thank you for this time. We'll see you next time. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me on the show. Have a good evening.
All right, you too. Bye.
Bye.
Katie Pruitt's version of Neil Young's After the Gold Rush. Thank you for returning to the second half of First Voices Radio. I'm your host, Teokusin Ghost Horse. I'm going to talk about the long war against Earth. This long war has been waged against Native peoples' lands, customs, languages, non-dogmatic spiritual traditions, the exploitation of natural resources, and the consequences such as we heard during Leona Morgan's interview in the first half of this program. Abandoned uranium mines poisoning the water begins with a poisoned mind, with poisoned thoughts begetting today's civilized system. I'm from POW Camp 007, which is what it was originally called when the Cheyenne River Lakota Reservation was set up in the late 1800s. It was named in honor of the Cheyenne Nation of Montana, who were allies of the Lakota, who struggled alongside us during the years of resisting Custer, colonialism, Christianity, capitalism, and now oligarchs. The Black Hills are Xesapa, where treaty violations were broken routinely to extract natural resources, especially after General George Armstrong Custer discovered gold that Native people already knew was there, essentially for the balancing of Earth. We have reached a critical juncture where the lasting damage remains evident. Native nations have not benefited from the exploitation of those resources. The resulting environment is a dangerously polluted radioactive landscape, devastating for the Native and non-Native people surrounding the sacred Black Hills. The loss of lives among Indigenous communities underscores the severe impacts of environmental degradation, a situation that demands urgent attention. In our 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty lands of what are the states of North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, and Western South Dakota, there are over 2,000 abandoned uranium mines with 2,247 confirmed. And this highlights the significant environmental challenges we face due to these sites. The Sacred Black Hills being at the geographical center of Turtle Island or continental North America. We have not given permission for any activity within the 1868 treaty territory. We continue to fight for the enforcement and return of the treaty. The Indian Health Service reports that we have the highest cancer rate in the country. We are the people of Northern Great Plains. The uranium mines are significant contributors to pollution, but they are not the only source. All rivers in western South Dakota and northeastern Wyoming are contaminated with radioactivity, also stemming from nearby coal fields. Surrounding the Black Hills, one of the largest open pit coal mines in the town of Wright, Wyoming, which supplies 40% of the coal in the U.S. And this coal travels to the east and west coast in mile-long trains every 20 minutes. Additionally, the geology of the Northern Great Plains reveals that these coal deposits are laced with uranium and radioactive particles. And when they mine, they drill deep holes, inject diesel and nitrogen, and then detonate. This process releases radioactive particles into the air, creating a brown haze visible in the area. These contaminants are carried by the winds over South Dakota, affecting our reservations and POW camps. We are breathing in radioactive particles from both abandoned uranium mines and coal mining operations, as well as from coal-fired power plants. It was after World War II the exploration ramped up. Right during World War II and after World War II, the late 40s, early 50s, and digging and drilling the late 1950s. It was during the Cold War between Russia and the U.S. where hundreds of ICBM or intercontinental ballistic missile silos were centered in a six-state area around the sacred Black Hills. Sometimes when you take the long roads back to the reservations, you can still see the remnants of these ICBM sites. Once the Cold War had ended and test ban treaties were signed, the ICBM bases were imploded, but they also left little nuclear power plants that continue to poison and still affect the aquifers. This, without getting any kind of remediation of all this radioactivity coming on to the people of the Northern Great Plains. 2,000 to 3,000 abandoned uranium mines in Wyoming, South Dakota, Montana. Intentional genocide. I see this as a deliberate genocide, not letting people know about these abandoned uranium mines. That coal that comes out of Wyoming, it comes here to the East Coast. It goes to the West Coast. And when they burn it, that coal smoke is not regulated or monitored for radioactive particles by the EPA. EPA does not monitor radioactive particles in coal smoke or in coal mining, the coal dust. They don't monitor radioactive particles, but for the East and the West Coast, wherever this Wyoming coal is going, people are breathing in radioactive particles from those coal-fired power plants, not only from the abandoned uranium mines, but they also get it from the coal mining and coal-fired power plants. Your American culture doesn't understand Earth as Mother Earth and the harm that is being done to her. And that's what's happening. We knew about uranium. We knew you don't touch it. Only certain ones were allowed to go in certain places. Oil, coal, uranium is to be left in the ground. There's a reason why it's there. Midakui Oyasi, everything has spirit and all are related to Earth. In 1972, President Nixon, by executive order, designated Western South Dakota a national sacrifice area, as well as the four corner state of New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, and Colorado. I grew up in Western South Dakota. So if some of you think this is not a local issue, you may have to think again of the energy needs of the United States, where the civilized people of the United States benefit from the places those of us in the Eastern Seaboard cannot see, the indigenous peoples, where the energy needs of this nation destroy the people's lives. You heard Leona Morgan in the first half of First Voices Radio, and I'm giving you a civilized rant here. And in this case, it's uranium that we're against. The United States, in its lack of wisdom in relationship with Earth, with its drill, baby, drill policy, is going to allow new mining because of the 1872 Mining Act, an archaic law. This is a simple definition of poison, and that it's too much of something is poison. And there's another word, we see it in the way the Lakota describe what is someone who takes too much. And that word is Washichu. So you can see the poisoned mentality that arrived here, still here, is still taking. And thank you again for this rant. My name is Teoxin Ghost Source. Stay with us here on First Voices Radio.
Tears me apart. Did you ever fight it? All of the pain, so much pride running through my veins, bleeding, I'm bleeding. My cold can't stand myself, and I know in my heart, in
ever noticed? I've been ashamed all my life. I've been playing games. We could try to hide it. It's all the same. I've been losing one day at a time. Bleeding, I'm bleeding. My cold little heart. Oh, I can't stand myself. Conquer.
hear a sound, it's going through my brain. I hear talking, I feel the falling rain. I see a young man crying, 'cause the whole world has let him down. I see a young man crying, staring at the cold, cold ground. My mind is like a spring in a clock that won't unwind. Can't see, can't think, can't feel, I'm out of time. I'm up and I'm down, tell me where will it end? On this carousel, tell me when will it end? I hear thunder and I can feel the wind. I can see angry faces in the eyes of men. I hear talking of people, the whole world is gone insane. And all there is left is the falling rain. See fire and rain and bloodshed all around, and it keeps going through my brain. I hear the sound, I hear talking of people, the whole world has gone insane. And all that is left is the falling rain. All there is left is the falling rain. All that is left is the falling rain.
All right, this is First Voices Radio, and you've been listening to the first of three, is Cold Little Heart by Michael Kiwanuka, then Conquer by Rivers, from the album Unfamiliar Skin. Rivers is spelled R-I-V-V-R-S. And then the last one we just finished listening to is by the Neville Brothers, from the album Brothers Keeper. The name was Fallen Rain. Did you know that you can hear us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Buzzsprout, Spotify, as well as other platforms? Just do a little research there. You can find us on Facebook at First Voices Radio. And you can find myself, Teoks and Ghost Tours, somewhere there and on Facebook. And we have broadcast internationally in Berlin and Potsdam, Germany. We've been heard in the very beginning when I was first in New York, in Kenya. We've been heard in Santiago, Chile. We've been heard in an island that I can't remember in the Caribbean. in Alaska and Canada. So yeah, First Voices Radio after 33 years is out there without any soliciting or demanding that your radio station carries us. It's all from our heart and to yours, knowing that this is the only way that people can change is to communicate that way. Because you can have all the information and all the knowledge that you want, and nothing changes until you make up your mind. But if we're touched somehow in the heart, then some movement occurs. Again, this is First Voices Radio, and thank you for joining us. My name is Teokasi Ghost Horse. By the way, if you want to email myself, Teokasin, it's teokasin@gmail.com. And thanks to our producer, Liz Hill, once again, for being there every week. So, from the East Gate of Turtle Island, where the sun and the water touched the earth at once, this is First Voices Radio. My name is Teokasin Ghost Horse. Doksha Ake Wachyank Telo. We'll see you again, surely and eventually.
Try. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy lunes 10 de marzo del 2025. Estados Unidos.